Good morning. My name is Michael McCusker. April is the month that commemorates the westernmost origin of American democracy at the expense of the obliteration of several millennia of Native cultures that might well have been seasoned by multitudes of invasive human cultures over eons of the insatiable human itch to travel and forcibly integrate whomever is earlier already there everywhere. I wrote an article for my Once Upon a Time newspaper, the North Coast Times Eagle, about Astorian origin. I have orated it a few times on this program and do so once more. April is Astoria's birthday. The once and future Astoria, with the quote from the immortal Egil Unnander, Astoria is the Paris of the Columbia River. Before anything else, you must remember that when the American ship, Columbus Reborn, entered the river that bears its name in the robust spring of 1792, a culture that had vibrantly dwelled on both shores for maybe 20,000 years, at that moment, began to become extinct. The history we celebrate is our own cultural history. That which we supplanted has generally been ignored as insufficient and not worth popular study until recently. Now, a few generations removed from their obliteration as hemispheric monarchs, we are interested in them. So new are we that we might be regarded as an alien pustule growing from the skin of a leathery 20-millennia culture that was decimated by its parasitic guests. We know little of their history, assorted myths, and a few bones to fill in the vast gaps of time in broadly general rather than individual narrative. An example of this is reflected in the tattooed cartoons that swirl around the Astoria column like stripes on a barber pole. Of all this fresco history and art from the Renaissance, which seems to have perished with the death of column artist Attilio Pistula, only one panel predates Western discovery, before the white man came. The Clatsop tribe, whom the county is named after, were gone long before Scandinavians got here in the late 19th century. By the 1840s, the tribe was virtually extinct as a people by smallpox and whiskey, traditionally weapons of colonization, more ruinous than rifles. A few years ago, an Astoria mayor criticized a chainsaw sculpture of a Clatsop chief. Her criticism was not justly artistic. She said it diminished Astoria's Scandinavian heritage and had to be reminded that the Chinook peoples had residence along the lower Columbia for tens of millennia. The mountainous surroundings of Astoria are a complicated geology of 200 million plates of collision between the Pacific Ocean tectonic plate and the North American continent. It is a volcanic and earthquake-structured erosion of a once extensive formation of sharp peaks and rift valleys inundated by ocean and ice. Through all of this geology flows the second mightiest river of the continent, beginning in the glacier far up in Canada and ending its 1,200-mile surge at the Pacific Ocean. That is the second thing to remember, that the river has always been Astoria's lifeblood. It was late for exploration by whites, though used by natives for thousands of years. the Boston captain, Robert Gray, sailed his ship into the river in May 1792, when everyone else of his contemporaries was certain or afraid. The wild surf they saw breaking on shifting sandbars at its entrance was on a beach instead. Gray gave the river its current name from his ship, Columbia Rediviva, itself named after the great navigator who discovered the Western Hemisphere in his way of reaching India 300 years earlier. The Great River of the West, a variation of Oregon was a name for it, was also immediately a gateway to Asia. The European exploration and exploitation of the Pacific Northwest, Russians, English, Spanish, and Americans newly free from insidious all beyond, is a microcosm of the immense forces of emigration and conquest set loose 300 years earlier when Columbus bumped into the Western Hemisphere on his way to India. Some celebrate, others bitterly denounce the intrusion of Europe into the Americas, which had existed comfortably apart from the rest of humanity for 20 millennia or so. Overcrowded and money-hungry Europe poured into the newly discovered half of the world as if it were an empty plain and overran the native cultures as if they were not there or not worth consideration, as well as obliterating a large number of native species, which continues. The Pacific Northwest has been a last small corner for Western exploration, with the exception of the poles and Antarctica. The present tenants of the Columbia River inherit a legacy of raw exploitation and waste. The riches, once so abundant, have been despoiled, virtually all used up in a dozen generations. The great wild river has itself been tamed with dams, drained by irrigation, and polluted as well as irradiated. The massive forests on both sides of its banks logged and supplanted with cities and farms, and the millions of salmon so numerous our descendants claim they could cross the river on their backs, have dwindled to only an endangered few. Astoria is the oldest city of the American West. It started as a frontier fort in 1811 on a bump of hill above the wide river. The strategic port John Jacob Astor and his friend Thomas Jefferson thought might dominate the Pacific fur trade that the empires of Russia, Spain, and England fought over. Astor, who desired to be the fur king of the West, lost his pelt on the Astoria venture. He had not anticipated either the War of 1812, when to avoid capture and pillage, his employees sold Fort Astor to the British, who renamed it Fort George after their king, or consolidation of the bitter rivals of Northwest Company, which had purchased Fort Astor, and Hudson's Bay, the premier capitalist empire in the New World, and that's a quote, for a couple of centuries, its fur hunters, the great explorers of the Northwest. The combination forced Astor, the USA's first millionaire and slumlord, to sell his Pacific Fur Company once again to the British and concentrate on charging high rents for substandard dwellings to immigrants settling on the East Coast, principally Manhattan Island. There was about a 20-year transition between the failure of the pelt market in Europe and China and the beginning of a century-long prosperity of Astoria in the twin resource extraction industries of timber and fishing. The major transformation, which has since defined Astoria, was the beginning of fishing, initially in the river for the plentiful and sumptuous salmon. The city was the first downriver interception of the spawning salmon, and with the surge of fisher folk from Scandinavia, much of boomtown Astoria was built on pilings over the river because of the steep hills that rose from the river like cake layers. The immense Pacific Coast forest was beyond measure then, the ages of trees commensurate with their dimensions. Thousands-year-old giants were decimated for an immediate human need for wood to build cities like Astoria. After nearly two centuries of unrelenting despoilation, the forest and the fish are just about gone. The animal skin-clad frontiersmen we engage in loving myth of the frontier West did not last long in the Northwest. Not only were they victims of a market change of styles in Europe and Asia, they were engulfed by wagon train immigrants who left their dead on the prairies, deserts, and mountains they voyaged across, and who bought the plow, the book, and the bank. Astoria was the end of the Oregon Trail. Lewis and Clark ended their transcontinental trek here, though namesake Astor never visited. The city's most prosperous period was during the late years of the 19th century, when tall masted ships and stern wheel riverboats crowded its wharves, and the river was swarmed with the winged sails of fish boats. Its dozens of canneries sent fish all over the world. Scores of trains hauled canned salmon into the interior, and thousands of tourists to the coast. For nearly a century, most Astoria men were fishermen or worked with hundreds of women in the canneries. Yet this prosperity was costly. The river and ocean claimed an astonishing toll of vessels and crews. At least 2,000 ships and boats are believed to have sunk near the river's entrance, and about 700 persons have perished. There are no known figures for native vessels and crews that met a similar fate over the thousands of years they fished in the river and ocean. Astoria's families have mourned a long succession of parents, spouses, lovers, children, neighbors, and shipmates. Astoria was infamous in those rowdy fin de siècle years for its sleazy waterfront saloons and brothels, and for its open practice of shanghaiing. Loggers, mariners, farmers, and tourists were drugged or beat up and kidnapped aboard China-bound ships by an army of crimps, saloon keepers, and brothel madams. Crime and potent drugs were rampant. Brawling and murder were common. And, of course, there were epic struggles between fishermen and cannery packers over the price of fish. For a brief time, Astoria had a population of nearly 30,000 in the 1920s and anticipated a peak of 100,000. Unabashedly promoting itself as the New York City of the Pacific Northwest. But the fish and trees that were to last forever were decimated in only a few generations. More than a century of rapacious logging and heedless overfishing, as well as electrifying the river with dynamo dams built upriver and on dozens of tributaries, and the Hanford Nuclear Reservation, and later the Trojan Nuclear Power Plant near Portland, killed the big salmon runs that had made Astoria the world's fish cannery capital. The railroads went to Portland or from Longview to Seattle, which killed Astoria as a major seaport, and two huge fires, comparable in their effect to those that swept through Rome, London, Chicago, and San Francisco, the worst Astoria fire in 1922 burned out its heart. Most of the timber industry is gone, and fishing along the lower river has dwindled almost to vanishing. The ocean out front has been raked clean. The canneries that bought the fish are closed, and only a few deteriorating husks are left, and then hardly any. The yards that built the boats are gone. The waterfront that used to be so busy is virtually abandoned. For many years, it seemed the riverbanks were fenced by fish boats left to fall apart by bankrupt fishermen, something like Rotten Row on Young's Bay, where captains beached their worn-out schooners, and later the hulks of steamboats, such as the once famous T.J. Potter. Schemes to capture industry to revive the city's economy with aluminum plants, coal docks, and shipwrecking yards die in labor, or before they come to labor. Richard Nixon claimed that the lower Columbia River was destined to be the light metals capital of the world, quote, unquote, and compared its potential to the heavy metals industries of Germany's Ruhr Valley. An oil module builder that named itself Astoria Oil Services marched in as an economic savior in the mid-1980s, but crept away like a Bedouin when it failed to meet its contracts. Great plans have been drawn up to transfigure the riverfront that are almost Athenian, but are plagued with cost overruns, lack of outside interest, and community protest. The city has designated its downtown core as an historical district, centerpiece of its museum without walls, and that's a quote. Although most buildings are relatively young, reconstructed from the ruins of the Astoria fire, similar to a forest receding on a burn. The hills remain quilted with old wood Victorian houses, which were belatedly discovered as a treasure more valuable than condos and malls they were almost displaced by. Having profited and decayed from the ruination of its resources and reckless disregard for future generations, Astoria puts its money on tourism, thrusting forward as its lure for tourists, its colorful but failed history, its boisterous and turbulent reality commercially saccharine into banal nostalgia to entice easy-spending tourists. Now the sultans of fun replace loggers and fisher people. They build shopping centers and malls, condominiums, bigger and glitzier motels, restaurants, and bars that displace the remaining trees and block ocean and river views. Cannon Beach to the south, which in an earlier era resisted opportunities to be a second Carmel, has acquiesced and booms like a gold strike town. Seaside mixed its sand with water and remade its graceful downtown into a cement mall. Astoria hustles its history and carpenter Gothic houses to draw tourists from the beach towns, which were obviously tough competition. The transformation of Astoria from a resource extraction economy has caused harm to many of its residents who have not recovered or successfully profited from the present reliance on tourism as a replacement. Tourism generally profits only a few. The rest are paid minimum wages, usually work seasonally, receive little or no benefits, and are seldom protected from employer abuse. The legacies of lifetimes spent in the woods or on the decks of fish boats are over, and experienced loggers and fisher folk and their children who expected to spend their lives the same way are forced to find other work. Menial and low-wage jobs are usually all that are available, or they leave. The younger generations flow out of Astoria and often out of Oregon. They move away right after high school or following a year or two at Clatsop Community College, Harvard on the Hill, as it's known, which might move its campus once the city's high school to the Astoria downtown, which has not yet occurred. Some of the city's young leave for college elsewhere. Most go to look for works in Portland or and Seattle or south to California. The attrition of the past decades has created serious problems for a civic renaissance. Astoria has little industry and limited appeal to men and women of skill or business, not only in attracting them, but keeping those who are here. Tourism is only a temporary solution to Astoria's long economic decline. A more solid intellectual base must be set in place through local schools to develop an industry Astoria could be good at. In the meantime, development of recreation facilities should not result in loss of habitat for residents. Prosperity has several definitions, but its usual meaning is material wealth. A city is prosperous if its industries and businesses are perking. Most of its citizens are employed and living in solid houses in good health, with good schools, libraries, and entertainment, and are putting money in the city treasury rather than sucking it dry, which happens in hard times. Astoria possesses the skills that built industrial America, but the nation is painfully converting from production to services, sending most industrial jobs overseas. The USA's purpose is to administrate the growing world economy and import its basic needs from developing and economically colonized countries. Astoria is part of a larger culture that is ebbing into a less vigorous middle age. What it has been is not only lost, it is unnecessary. City leaders claim to soberly be facing the future. They say that Astoria will not prosper by fantastic schemes as it has banked on in the past. The city's decline will be reversed only by hard work, wise and creative decisions, which have been rare, and above all, equitable community participation at all levels. The Astoria-Megler Bridge is a symbol of the retreat of Astoria's citizens from the maritime environment that built the city. Designed and built with considerable skill, the bridge displaced a fleet of ferry boats that daily crossed the 4-mile river between Astoria and now defunct Megler, Washington. The steel bridge stands ankle deep in the river like a gigantic museum skeleton. Its body arches high over the river on the Oregon side so that large ships can pass underneath, and its tail drags just above the water for about 3 miles beyond the ship's channel to the Washington shore. The river no longer plays a principal role in the lives of the people who live alongside it. Once and for a long time, the river was the main highway and major means of livelihood for most of the people who settled its banks and uprooted the tribes of Indians with small, busy towns along its length. History moves on. The USA claims world supremacy as its collapsed nemesis rots in catastrophe, and the aftershocks of its fall, the Soviet Union I'm speaking of, at least diminished the likelihood of a nuclear missile kissing the mouth of the Columbia. A massive earthquake is predicted soon. The grinding and shifting of geological plates off our shore, a problem for everyone running up the hills for shelter from a tsunami and the downtown landfill dissolving into the river like Alka-Seltzer during an earthquake, might be that the hills would tumble down upon them. The crowding earth is pushing into sparsely populated areas like irresistible tides, and it should be expected that eventually the moribund towns along the lower Columbia River will be repopulated and doubled or tripled in size, and that an entirely new and incredibly larger than ever commerce will take place based on population needs instead of resources. Only a devastating catastrophe such as the anticipated earthquake will prevent the Pacific Northwest from filling up. The millennial century, now in its third decade, just breaking ground, commences Astoria's third century, which inspires provocative questions. Will Astoria in this new century be the great port has always wanted to be? Will Astoria be overwhelmed by a mushrooming population? Will the Astoria-Megler Bridge be replicated a dozen times? The old Victorian houses and churches preserved, burnt in another series of fires, or torn down and replaced with a denser architecture that will terrace the hills in massive housing developments and business malls? Will fleets of ships to meet greater needs thoroughly modernize and expand port facilities and possibly reverse the current project of refurbishing the city's antiquity? Will Astoria prosper, or conversely, turn into a huge and starving squalor? The momentum of history has opposite cusps, such as being propelled to greater achievements as a result of the past, or its downside, history as a coffin, with each passing moment another nail hammering it shut. Prosperity and decline are temporary, as slipping from here to there. The only real certainty is that future Astoria is unlikely to be any place familiar to us. This is Michael McCusker. Joanne Rideout is editor of this program.